104DGS. Big sports night tonight. We have the Cardinals, I believe, at 6:45. College World Series. That's been fun.
Tennessee and Texas A&M. A&M has basically never won a championship game in the major men's sports.
Didn't know that.
The last one they have is football, but it was like 1939.
Get out.
And they won it like in the time when they used to give the award out before the bowls.
Yeah.
So they've never played for a national championship, so big for them. And then Tennessee is, I don't think they've won one in forever. So good matchup, yeah.
And by the way,
two SEC
tonight?
Schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how about this? Have you been tracking the Stanley Cup Finals? So a lot going on for tonight. So game seven, obviously, winner wins the Stanley Cup. The Panthers won the first three games. They were up 3-0. It's now 3-3 going into game seven. So if Edmonton wins, it would be the first time since 1942 that an NHL team won the Stanley Cup after being down 3-0. Mm-hmm. But we also haven't had a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup since 1993.
Whew.
So it's been 31 years since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. So
do you have a dog in the fight?
Not really, no, because I mean, it'd be kind of cool if Matthew Tkachuk gets a cup at the same time that Jason Tatum wins an NBA title. But man, it's hard to root against all of Canada.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Because I saw, you know, when the Cardinals were playing the Rockies, I flipped over to the Rockies TV because for whatever reason on MLB.TV it was not giving me the Cardinals feed for whatever reason. Something was weird. So I flipped over and Larry Walker was on, and he was in town here because he was doing an appearance at the Hall of Fame, I think it was, but then he was got history with both, so he was on the broadcast for like two or three innings. And they were asking him about the Stanley Cup Finals. He's like, "Well, I'm a Vancouver guy, but the entire country is rooting for the Edmonton Oilers. Like, that's what we want. You know, we all hate them when it's against our team, but when it's our team against anybody else, or when it's the Canadian team against anybody else, they got a whole country that's going to be rooting for Edmonton." So, kind of cool.
We have some Donald Trump sound for you. Then I have a take I haven't heard anyone else say. Which one are we going to start with?
The first one says nice or mean.
Okay.
We want just about all of those suckers. You know, we want them. How should I handle him? Should I be tough and nasty?
Yes!
Or should I be... Should I be tough and nasty and just say you're the worst president in history? Or should I be nice and calm and let him speak? 50. Be tough. Be tough. So bad. So bad.
Crazy.
But anyway, it'll be a good, I'm sure he'll be prepared.
Go ahead. You can do the next one.
Dana White. Did anyone ever hear of Dana White? He's a legend, right? UFC, ultimate fighter, ultimate fighting. And he's a fantastic man. I said, Dana, I have an idea. Why don't you set up a migrant league of fighters and have your regular league of fighters? And then you have the champion of your league. These are the greatest fighters in the world. Fight the champion of the migrants. I think the migrant guy might win. That's how tough they are. He didn't like that idea too much, but actually, it's not the worst idea I've ever had. No, it's these are tough people. These people are tough, and they're nasty, mean.
Hey, you want the last one?
Which one is it?
It says jacked up.
Oh, sure.
He's sleeping now. Because they want to get him good and strong, so a little before debate time, he gets a shot in the ass, and that's... They want to strengthen him up. So he comes out. He'll come out... I say he'll come out all jacked up, right? All jacked up.
So...
That one's actually funny.
It's wildly entertaining. There's no taking it away from the man. But here is my take. Isn't it everyone's ultimate dream in life to be accepted for exactly who they are? If there's a better definition of true love, I don't know what it is, whether it's an intimate romantic relationship with a partner or a spouse, or it's the relationship you have with your kids, having someone really, truly see you and go, I love it. That's the ultimate expression of love. And more than any person I know, he has it. Only from his crowd. The other people hate him. They say, we see who you are and we hate you for it. But for tens of millions of people, he has it all.
Yeah.
He can be exactly who he is. He wouldn't have said migrant fight 5 years ago.
Right.
But now he knows he can catch 34 felonies. No one cares. And he's not going to jail. And he can say, let's have migrant fights. And then later on, he says that the migrant who wins gets to stay in the country.
Yeah. I need someone to explain this to me like I'm 5 years old, because I don't get the migrant fight comment. Like, what is it that he's going for? I don't understand.
I think it's a play on...
Because everyone, the crowd went crazy when he said it. I'm like, what am I missing here?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think it's a play on the bum fights when they used to pit homeless people against each other. And I think he's just saying, like, yeah, we should get these migrants to fight each other. And then we'll get one grand migrant champion, and they're tough and they're mean and they're nasty people. And then they'll fight your champion. And then if they win, they can stay. Yeah, I think it's just...
Okay. It's exactly. So I shouldn't read into it too much.
No,
exactly as stupid and cruel and mean spirited as it sounds.
Okay.
But his people love it. Love it.
Hmm.
If anything, he should lean more into it.
Well, it's also, I think, a pretty good indicator of how Thursday's debate is going to go. If he's asking this crowd, should I be nice or should I be mean? And the crowd just goes absolutely crazy for mean. I guess that's probably how he's going to go. I mean, he likes to please these rallies full of people. So,
go ahead.
The migrant stuff plays extremely well with his crowd. If you remember, that was what really took off his campaign back in 2015 when he started talking about the wall and Mexico's going to pay for it and it's an S-hole country and we're going to, you know, keep them all out or whatever. That was what really, I think, that was when his campaign went from a goofy joke, that rich guy from TV that's really annoying is running for president, to...
And then CNN...
Topping the polls.
Okay, so I pretty much go CNN, Fox News. I'll go to MSNBC every now and then, but I don't like their morning show, and I just don't like their personalities that much. But CNN, to me, is sort of the defender of liberalism. And Fox News, of course, is the opposite. But they clutch their pearls too much. Like, they were doing the thing about him being jacked up. And they're like, this is the new version of the birther movement. And that he's going to use illicit drugs and this and that. Like, it's sometimes when someone is being funny, which Trump was, he's being offensive. You're saying that a sitting president is going to use drugs to appear healthier than he is. That's offensive. But it's also like, we all get it. Mm-hmm.
Well,
right?
Well, it's also like the fifth or sixth time he said something about this. So Trump has a way of like introducing you to this crazy idea.
It.
And at first you're going like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's accusing the sitting president of being on drugs. And then he just keeps doing it and keeps doing it. So by the time he says he's going to get a shot in the ass, you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, that was pretty funny, I guess.
I find that I don't know how anybody gets offended when someone takes a shot at the person who is currently the most powerful person in the world. I think Joe Biden can take it.
Especially from someone who just had that job.
Yeah. To me, that stuff is nothing. Who cares? It was kind of funny. But I don't like anyone punching down. I'm sorry. I just don't like it. I don't care who you're punching down at when you're up near the top and you're punching down at anyone. I don't care who it is, working class people, migrant people. I mean, you can say we need to control immigration and let's be rational about it and do it right. We don't need to be making jokes about it. We don't need to be turning it into the Hunger Games. That's not funny.
Agreed.
That's the problem, is when you're punching down, to me, you lose. When you're punching up or you're punching at the people at your level, great. Have at it. Have your fun. Make your jokes. Whatever.
We're in agreement.
Yeah.
We're in agreement.
I still have to go back, though. Like, I also think it's funny when he says he's going to get a shot in the ass. That's funny. But a few months ago when he first started floating this whole, like, you know, Biden's on drugs, right? We all were pretty appalled. It's just the way he
frog
works.
In the boiling water.
Yeah. He just, you get used to it. And then suddenly it's okay to say things like this. Like, if Barack Obama and Mitt Romney are not going to be accusing each other of doing these kind of things in the 2012 debates.
Which I think is also an interesting point, because myself, as a confessed institutionalist who pines for the boring days of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, you either find all of this horseplay and shenanigans, ridiculous, every now and then funny. You know, I have a sense of humor. I can go like, oh, yeah, I get what you're doing there. Mm-hmm. I see it. That's well played, sir. But I miss statesmen.
Yeah. I don't like
it. And maybe they were always BSing us. Maybe none of them were really statesmen either.
But put on the front. You're supposed to be important people. You're supposed to be the grown-ups in the room taking things seriously. It's not supposed to be reality TV. So I don't like it when Joe Biden and his group lean into the dark Brandon stuff. I think it's stupid. And I don't like it when Trump does the same thing on his own. It should be beneath that level. Don't you think? I mean, that's what you're saying, essentially, is that all of that is beneath the office, but not anymore. It's what it is. I mean, that's what the Senate races are now. That's what House races are now. That's what the White House race is now. It's a reality show.
I would, and I mean this, I'm not being facetious. For me personally, Dave Glover on Thursday evening, I would love a policy debate.
Please.
I would love to see what Trump understands about policy. I still don't even really have a good hold of what Biden's policy is. I know what he's done and hasn't done, but I would love to hear from him what he thinks is important outside of just rah-rah bullcrap. But really, let's be honest, we're watching one to see if Joe Biden looks old and see if Donald Trump looks crazy. It's like trying to decide to buy a PT Cruiser or a neon green Corvette with no brakes, you know?
I mean, the only thing next is going to be like real Housewives of the White House. Like, that is the direction that politics has gone for the last 6 to 8 years. We're going towards reality TV because reality TV is cheap and everybody likes it.
And I said it last week. It's going to be fascinating in 2028 and 2032. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? What happens? Because these guys are going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's no one who's... I don't. If you think there's someone who's going to take over for Trump, you are insane. No one can do what he does. It's not going to be Vance or Marco Rubio or
whoever. None of them
picks.
Have the extra that he has.
No. He means it.
Yeah.
He's not playing a part.
But also he is... He's always been, going back to since he began his public life, he's always been outrageous.
Well, do you think that...
Some of the others we know, they've just faked it lately because they know it works.
It hasn't been that long since you had Mitt Romney. Do you think that the GOP can crawl back to what it used to be when Donald Trump is gone one way or another?
I don't feel like most people in the GOP are interested in that.
But if they can't find a champion and they keep losing, eventually you have to try something else.
You're asking, but what you're asking to do is rein in something that can't be reined in at this point. Like Kevin just said, it's beneath the office, but not anymore. Now that's part of the office. When your party has gone to the places that the GOP has gone, you can't suddenly be like, and now we're poly purebred
family
values.
So you think it's sort of like expecting everyone to give up social media. Once we've had it,
right,
it's going to be here. Once we've seen the Hunger Games version of politics, it's just what it's going to be until...
They've seen how well the cheering that Trump gets at these rallies and the reaction and the screaming and all of that.
But
they've tapped into a part of society that didn't have a voice before. Yes. And I don't feel like that part of society is going to give up that voice and say, okay, we're going to behave now.
But there's only one Shane Gillis, the comedian. Mm. You can go up there and try to be Shane Gillis, but the problem is when you fail, you're gonna eat it. You're gonna fail hard. There's only one AC/DC. If I decided to start a rock blues band and sing like AC/DC, I would get laughed off the stage.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is gonna happen with Donald Trump. When he's no longer on the stage, whether the gentleman passes away or he's the next president and then he can't run anymore, they're going to try to replace him. But they're going to fail.
Hmm. What if, though? I mean, because we talk a lot about how the fringes of each political viewpoint keep pulling further away and how the super progressive people are no longer what most Democrats believe in or what most liberal minded people believe in. It's going too far. What if the Democratic Party just tries to find their Trump that appeals to the extreme, 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 and is loud and boisterous and different? Because, right, you're not going to say the same kinds of things because those things will make the very progressive people angry. But you find a way to express their anger, mm-hmm, their frustration, and then the mainstream people would be well, crap, now what do we do?
There's a plane happening that's dividing the internet. calling it Spit Kid. So a couple is sitting behind a couple who have a 3 to 5 year old toddler. And the toddler keeps turning around and blowing raspberries like that and spitting all over the wife. And so, that's cute, eh? And after two or three times, she says, can you keep your child from doing that? They're spitting on me. They try. They can't. The child keeps doing it. And then the husband of the spit-e says, hey, if you can't control your child, I will. And they say, well, that's only, you're only saying that because you don't have kids. He said, we have 5 kids and 6 grandkids, and not one of them would ever act like this. And then they tried to have him arrested and taken off the plane for threatening the life of a child.
Oh, come on. Threatening his life.
That's not what happened. I mean, God almighty. First of all, I know there's only so much you can do with a little one, right? Like, if they're going to cry, you can't just stop them. Like, you know, people are always like, stop your kid. You can't. When your kid's crying like that, when they lose it, they're going to cry. You have to just let them get through it, and you can find ways to calm them down. I think this is pretty controllable.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty controllable. If your kid does that, or you know that they have a tendency to do that just because they think it's funny or silly or whatever, you have to be prepared for that.
I think this generation of soft parents, myself included, is setting up our grandkids for a rough life. Patton Oswalt used to have an old bit where he would say he hates hippies because they create conservatives because you rebel against whatever your parents were.
Right.
And like my kids have already told me, they're like, oh, if you have grandkids, they're gonna pay for you being such a soft parent. Like, we are going to be hard asses.
They think that.
I don't think this guy like threatened the life of the child, but he probably shouldn't have said anything because it's always going to be a sticky situation when you're trying to like discipline another person's kid. Mm-hmm. I would have gotten up and just gotten a flight attendant to take care of it. And I mean, and it's really sad that you would have to go over the parent's head like that and bring in another source of authority. But I think if a flight attendant or if one of the pilots can walk back and be like, you need to sit down and not turn around and not blow I mean, come on.
Seems like the kind of thing that just would not have happened even 30, 40 years ago.
No.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have happened when I was a kid.
I mean, he's wrong to say what he did.
Yeah, should have said it
but differently. He shouldn't be getting arrested for just being a frustrated dude who's getting spit on. By the way, the kid is between 3 and 5. That's plenty old to understand instructions from your parents to stop doing something.
Agreed.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DG is going to talk to our pal Scotty Warman here, who oddly asked for this for his walk-up music. So,
yeah.
Some story there.
That fits.
I don't know what it is. What's up, brother?
I did. Wait a minute. Well, I know this much, Steve. This was not the choice of Wheeler. I'm curious if Wheeler has any input as far as what the music intros and outros of the commercials are.
Only judging.
Yeah. No, I would. Judging. I don't. Scotty, nobody's going to want to hear what I want to hear, so it's fine.
Right, I
get it.
Our buddy Ben Boyd would. I know that.
Yeah, Ben and I are concert buddies. We're about the only one. He's about the only person that I know that will be like hang with me in the music scene. Yeah.
So, Scotty, we just found out that Contreras just activated a few minutes ago. Good news.
It is good news. I think he's probably still trying to find his timing when you look at some of the numbers offensively, but obviously a must for this ball club, especially behind home plate with Herrera going on the aisle over the weekend, guys. And so Contreras will probably get a better part of the time. But I'll be honest with you, and I know, Kev, you and I talked about this, what was about a week ago when we had that Friday afternoon game. Paez has really surprised me what he has done behind the plate. Here's a guy that wasn't really heard of a lot, Dave, and I think what he's done handling the pitching staff and kind of pressed into the duty, I think he's done a terrific job. And anything you get from a guy like that from an offensive standpoint is just an added boost. And he gave the Cardinals a couple hits yesterday in that terrific game that Sonny Gray pitched yesterday. We thought we were going to see a little history yesterday, but unfortunately fell short in the seventh inning.
Kev, I'm going to let you talk about Páez from a technical angle, but I will say this. I love him. I just love his attitude. He just he plays with joy. He plays like a little kid.
I agree wholeheartedly. I love the kid's spirit. And just a jovial kid. And of course, you know, the weekend before last, he hits his first two major league home runs in Chicago with his dad in the stands. I mean, how could you even write a better script than that, especially getting the second one on Father's Day at Wrigley Field? I think he's just been spectacular. And, you know, I know a couple of the pitchers have mentioned openly how they have been really impressed with how they work with him. And I think what's helped Pedro out along with Ivan, since Wilson had been out for over a month, was the fact that you got guys that have been there before. You know, we're talking about the Sonny Grays, the Kyle Gibsons, the Lance Lynns of the world, the Miles Michaelis who came back. You got a lot of veteran guys, and I think that's kind of eased the pain a little bit of being pressed in this duty with Wilson Contreras being out with the injury as far as handling the pitching staff. And I think that bolsters well, and now they have confidence that they can do it, especially with the help of those veterans from the pitching staff.
Yeah, what's interesting, too, is what are they going to do when Herrera's ready to come back?
Al and I were talking about this over the weekend, and I think it's a great question. I don't think you can just put Páez back down as AAA Memphis. I think it's a really difficult decision, and I know Al says that, you know, they may have to consider, it sounds crazy, putting Herrera back down to Memphis, even though he can hit at the major league level. But obviously, we all know it's not a secret that teams are running on him, and that's maybe something they want to work on with him down in Memphis when he gets off the IL. But I honestly, Kev, I don't have a problem with this team going with three catchers, because now that you have to have 13 position players, five guys, well, I guess four when you consider
the DH.
I really have no problem with this team carrying three catchers as far as I'm concerned.
Well, eventually, though, that's going to mean somebody else goes. That's going to mean Carpenter or Crawford goes. Eventually, that's going to – I mean, like when Newt Barr comes back, if Edmund comes back, you might lose two of those guys. That's why it's so interesting to me, because one of your biggest weaknesses on the bench is you don't have any right-handed pop. Well, that's Herrera. And
exactly.
How long can you carry – Crawford and Carpenter, who has not hit, and at the same time have Ciani and Páez, because there's no offense in that group, really.
It might be Fermin and Ciani if you get both Edmund and Newt Barr back sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Here's the other thing that, again, I refer to Al because he was with me over the weekend, but we were actually talking about on the air, I think it was yesterday, on the pregame shows. Even when these guys are back, I think you agree with me, Kev and Dave, I don't see how you can move Alec Burleson out of this lineup.
No. He's been your best hitter.
He's got to be your guy, whether it's the outfield or DH or what have you. And it's crazy when you think about, even in going towards the middle of spring training, if everybody was healthy, he was probably going to be the odd man out and going down to Memphis, which seems crazy right now.
Yeah, he's been really good. And there's nothing weird or fake about it. Like, all of the batted ball stuff backs up what he's doing, so it's not like he's been lucky. And then the question becomes, who comes out?
Like, you know, before you move on, you know who Burleson reminds me of? Lance Berkman.
He looks a little bit like
and
the swing.
Plays like him. He's goofy. He keeps everyone loose.
But he plays outfield like old Lance Berkman.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. No, look, I'm kidding, because Burleson's gotten a lot better since last year. His defense has really improved, and that was something he had to take care of in the offseason, and I think he did.
I love guys that look like they're playing pickleball, but are just studs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a great analogy. I'm going to have to use that the next time.
Yeah.
I like that. No, he really is. And I'll tell you, while he obviously can't move like some of the other outfielders, but he does have an arm. Remember,
he does.
When he was at East Carolina.
Yep.
So when he's out in the outfield, I mean, he does have a rocket. It's about as accurate as you can get. And I don't, you know, Kevin, you and I, in fact, were talking about this the other time we were in the sports office. There is the fact that it's not like there are a lot of big arms in the outfield in Major League Baseball anymore. They're few and far between, unfortunately. We don't see the Dave Parkers in the world anymore.
Not as many.
If you like that analogy, I was watching you guys yesterday, Scotty, and watching Al talk about Sonny Gray is like watching someone talk about their former self. Like, I know that they played different positions in different ways, but, I mean, I've never seen anyone as intense as Al until Sonny.
You're right. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, you got to love his intensity even after a game. And we played the clip. I don't know if anybody saw it during our pregame show, but our producer says, let's play this clip from three starts ago when he wasn't so good. And, I mean, he said he looked like beep. We had to beep it out. Mm-hmm. And he needed to just restart again. And sure enough, he has done that. He has pitched at least seven innings in his last three starts. And I know some out there, I don't know what you guys felt that maybe he should have come out, shouldn't have come out after just 80 pitches yesterday, but it was scorching hot out there. And I know Brad Thompson told me that, you know, they like to keep him at around, you know, 85, 90 pitches, hence why he only went 7 2/3 last week against Miami. Some people still like to say, hey, you know, let him go to the nine innings, but, you know, you want to save this guy. As good as he's pitching, he can still give you 7-8 innings. That's a huge bonus for this team, and you're not using the bullpen as much, especially over this past weekend. And even Miles Michaelis is starting to pitch with a lot of length, so that's a positivity. And hopefully tonight Lance Lynn can kind of turn things around, because he's kind of unfortunately hit a rut here over his last couple 2-3 starts.
I'm a little torn on the Sonny thing, because I think if you look at him like big picture, he hasn't thrown 200 innings since 2015. You know, he had about 180, 184 last year, and he's kind of trending toward that number now. I think they're looking at a sweet spot where you want him to still be this good in September and ideally October. And if you run him into a position where he's working more than he has in previous 8-9 years, you worry that he runs into a wall, and you don't want that to happen. At the same time, you're not getting innings from Lance Lynn. You're not getting innings from Andre Pallante. And, you know, you're starting two from Miles, which is great. And Gibson's given you innings all year. So, you know, you've got a couple of those spots. But we have seen the fraying, though, a little bit with guys like Jojo Romero. And they've had to go back to Romero and Kittredge so much, and Helsley in save situations, because they play nothing but close games. So the worry is, how do you balance the two things, right? Because you want to keep Sonny being Sonny the way he is now, because he's a Cy Young contender right now. He's been amazing. How do you balance that with winning games and also not burning out the guys that you need at the back end? And the answer is probably you need other guys like Ryan Fernandez and maybe Gallegos coming back to also help out in those late-inning situations.
Well, the Gio thing, I think, is huge. If he can find himself again, I say if. And the hope that that's going to be the case for Gallegos. I mean, heck, guys, just look at last week when the Cardinals were in Miami. Helsley didn't even see the mound in the bullpen. And it finally came out that they basically shut him down. Just what you're talking about, Kev, is the fact that, you know, holding, scaling Sonny Gray back in June, so he's still pitching like this in August and September. You're looking at the same thing with Helsley, but you're also trying to do the same thing with Jojo and Kittredge, and you're exactly right. You're going to need guys that can give you a little bit more of innings, if you will, and give those guys a little bit of break. And that's why, you know, and Al pointed this out, Dave, as well, on Saturday, was the nice thing was not only a victory on Saturday, but the margin of victory. So instead of the ninth inning, you're not at a 1-2 run game. You don't have to throw the big boys out there. You know, Leahy finishes up the game, well, I think has really pitched well over the last three or four opportunities. And that's the one thing that goes back into seeing this offense a little bit kind of perk. You know, you hope that this continues so you don't have to use a high leverage situation every single time to try to close out a victory. And I think hopefully that can continue with especially what we've seen from some of these guys from an offensive standpoint.
This is a bit in the weeds, but have we, like, when I used to play baseball and watch it as a kid, I didn't care about how much we were using relievers, but it seems that we've lost sort of the art of the middle relief pitcher, someone who can go 2-3 innings for you, or am I making that up?
No, I don't think so. I actually had this conversation a few years ago with the guys that I work with over at Bally/Fox. And I said, you know, these, you know, Ricky Horton was a guy that was a middle relief guy. You know, Brad was a middle relief guy. Al obviously closed things out, but Al, who's more old school than you and I, Dave, mm-hmm. will say, I pitched three innings for a save, you know? And I think that that's an area that I think you could actually, instead of, as I say, one inning for the last three innings, why can't a guy go two innings? Why can't a guy go three innings? And I think it's just all of the makeup and how guys are actually built. I think for a guy like Helsley, the smartest move I think the Cardinals made was deciding, hey, you're going to pitch tonight, and that's it. Because Helsley could do it for a couple of innings, but then in his recovery process, he takes a little bit longer than other pitchers. So then you've got your big saves guy who's down for maybe the rest of it. If you do a game one of a series, he's down the rest of the series and potentially even the first game of another series. So that's why in some aspects you want players, pitchers, relievers to go one inning. But I agree with you, Dave. I think guys, especially in the middle relief, should be stretched out. Ricky Horton especially was a guy, if we recall, for the teams of the 80s, Ricky would always go more than one inning. He would go two, three innings. Jeff Lottie was another guy that was a part of that bullpen by committee in the mid-80s that went more than one inning. Ken Daly, obviously, is another guy. So I think you make a great point there, Dave, that, you know, can you stretch some of these guys out to beyond just one inning to set up Helsley in that ninth inning?
That is our friend Scott Warman from Bally's pre- and post-game with Al. Thank you, Scotty. Appreciate it, my friend.
You got it. Great talk to you guys.
Kevin, what's your album like this? Meet the Beatles, Atlantis D'Amour by the Police, and Back in Black, and probably Van Halen 1 were my Mount Rushmore of, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, the first time I heard it, I listened to Back in Black. It was a cassette.
Yep.
Because I'm old. Just over and over, flip it. What were yours?
So Van Halen original, like Van Halen 1. After that, it might be the self-titled System of a Down, their debut record. And
Obviously you could have.
Yeah.
How close did you come to not being a metalhead?
I don't know. I think it was like, once I started hearing everything, I was like, I'm in. Everything I heard, I was like, yes. Judas Priest, yes. Iron Maiden, yes. Oh my God, Metallica and Megadeth, when they came out. I don't know that a lot of people now understand it, but back then, you were considered a freak if you liked them. People thought there was something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Of course, maybe there has been something wrong with us all along.
Who thought there was something wrong with Kevin Wheeler?
But like back then, though, you were like, oh my God, he listens to Metallica. Is he evil? Is he, you know, like, because everybody always has that scare about the newest, heaviest, right? AC/DC was that for a long time. So no, every time something came out that was going like that, although there was a threshold. Like I can't do death metal. Like, I can do that sound for little bits and pieces within a larger song, but I can't do whole songs like that. But the other one, see, what do you say, the Mount Rushmores, might have been, well, you know what, Guns N' Roses, the original, you know.
Rachel, what about you?
Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, gosh. So mine's more like a lot more like pop punk from the early 2000s, but we had, it wasn't like an album, but it was the Green Day International Super Hits CD. I listened to that a million times. There was a Blink 182 album. And then I got into like Modest Mouse, their album Good News for People Who Love Bad News. That was one of the first CDs that I asked for that for Christmas and got that. I'm hard pressed to find like a fourth big one.
Interesting how we criticize each other.
Yeah.
Just like, had Rach been born 30 years before that, she'd have the same list I do.
Probably.
Had I been born 30 years later, I'd have the same list. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we're like, no, your music sucks. It's so stupid. You're so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I was younger, and I would, especially when I was in like college radio and it was an alternative station, and I thought I was all cool because I was the music director. I thought that meant something. Like, no, it's just your taste. It's what you like. There's nothing that makes
you
better
like
than
you hear.
Right, exactly. There's nothing like inherently bad or lame or whatever about the kind of music. There's probably some music that I would be like, it's pretty lame, but
classical.
Classical.
I'm kidding. That's a joke. But they are the snobbiest, though. People like classical, like, oh, you guys are all beneath us.